Sheryl Crow. Hurdy Gurdy Man by Donovan. Norwegian Wood by the Beatles. Of Montreal to Disconnect the Dots. Can't You Hear Me Knocking by the Rolling Stones. Eloquent did Social Experiment. We heard Sun by Lucy Gooch. Interlude 1 by Raspberry Bulbs. And in the background now, That's a Thousand Words by J-Song. And you've been listening to What's the Frequency, Kenneth? I'm Paul Fisher.
Radio presents This American Moment, Super Tuesday coverage 2020. Tune in to your local Pacifica station on Tuesday, March 3rd for updates, news, and analysis as voters in Alabama, Arkansas, Colorado, Georgia, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, and Virginia go to the polls. Heard on WBAI 99.5 FM, WPFW 89.3 FM, KPFT 90.1 FM, KPFK 90.7 FM, KPFA 94.1 FM, and Pacifica affiliates across the country, beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Pacifica Radio Network, 70 years serving 100% of the 99.
From Cuba, Elito Reve y su orquesta is coming to legendary SOBs for a concert to benefit WBAI. Hi, I'm Maria con Sabor Latino. Join us on Friday, February 28th for Elito Reve, icon of Cuban popular music, with his 15-piece orchestra directly from Cuba. Doors open at 11 p.m. and the first 20 WBAI listeners who become Con Sabor Latino buddies, sustaining members for $10 or more a month, get in free. Join us at SOB's Friday, February 28th for fabulous music and dancing and a cultural experience you won't want to miss. See you there.
And it's a minute and a half past 1 a.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming around the globe at WBAI.org. Ordinarily, you would be hearing Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. Jim will be back next week for another wonderful episode of the longest-running science fiction program in the entire world. But right now, by order of manager, the management, we present this encore presentation of the Golden Age of Radio from this past Sunday evening.
Now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the historic sounds of radio's bygone days. The golden age of radio rides again.
Well, good. Good evening, and welcome to this edition of the Golden Age of Radio. I'm your host, Max Schmid. Tonight, Gunsmoke returns after a one-week hiatus, and this is a pivotal episode in the series, simply titled Kitty. Yeah, Matt wants to take Miss Kitty to the town dance. Well, we'll see what ensues when we hear that program, which will be coming up very shortly. We have another episode of Destination Freedom, the story of James Weldon Johnson, early head of the NAACP, who fought against lynching. He was also a scholar and ambassador. Why, this program seems to only cover his earliest years, and they could have done at least another whole program on his later life and career. He was also wrote popular tunes in Tin Pan Alley. And we'll hear his story tonight. And if we have time, if you call and pledge and leave me enough time, we're going to hear a very exciting episode of Dr. Tim Detective. That's right. We've been holding off as long as we could, but we need 15 minutes of extra material tonight. Last week, I tried to jam in too many programs, and we didn't make enough money. So this time we're cutting back to 2.5 hours, and we're trying to squeeze in an additional 15-minute show in our 2 hours here. But, you know, during the fun drive, the key thing is we've got to make money to keep the station going. So that has to be the focus of my efforts. But before all of that, let's listen to the 32nd episode of Gunsmoke, originally broadcast on November 29th, 1952, simply titled Kitty.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Mr.
Bumby? Huh? Oh, hello, Marshal. Morning, Mr. Dillon.
Morning, Sam. Is Kitty around?
Oh, don't know she's up yet, but if she is, she ought to be down soon.
Well, I'll wait.
Nippy this morning.
Oh, feels good. It's a nice time of year, huh?
I don't know. I kind of like spring myself.
Sam, you better wash that glass over,
huh? Hmm? Oh, yeah. can I get you something? Beer, maybe?
Got any coffee?
Sure. Just made a pot.
Oh, I'll be fine. Her face is something wondrous fair.
That's pretty, man. Oh. You got a pretty voice.
Oh, it is. Good enough for calling hogs, I guess. you just get up?
A while ago. Why?
Oh, it just strikes me I haven't seen you close to early like this.
Uh-huh.
No, I you look fine. I mean that you...
You better quit while you're ahead.
Yeah, I guess it's...
Where's Sam?
Oh, he's bringing in coffee.
Oh, Sam, cup for me, please.
Sure, Miss Kitty.
What's the occasion, Matt?
Kitty? There's a party tomorrow night. A dance. It's a benefit for the new school down at the hall, you know? Ever fellas to bring a girl? You know?
It happens at dances. Go on.
Well, what I'm trying to... Will you go? With me?
I'd kind of like to, Matt, but... No, thanks.
Oh.
Well, I gotta work here, you know that. Besides...
Well, you ought to be able to get off.
Well, even if I could, ladies might not take kindly to it, Matt. I'm not rightly polite society.
What do you care about what...
Well, thanks anyway, Matt. That smells wonderful. Sammy, I think I'll marry you.
Me? Shucks. Me? Oh, shucks.
Listen, Kitty, about the dance, I've already bought the tickets.
You're sweet, Matt, and I thank you kindly for thinking of me, but you better ask someone else.
Well, it isn't... Sam, will you go and polish up your glasses, please?
Hmm? Oh, sure, Mr. Dillon, sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, look, Kitty, I'm asking you to go with me. It's important to me that you go.
Are you making love to me, Matt? At this hour in the morning?
No, I mean it. I want you to go to the dance.
You want to be embarrassed? You want everyone to stare at us? You know what they'll say? My, the marshal really should have better sense than to bring that woman here. It ain't decent. It ain't proper.
Okay.
Well, it's true. I'm a hostess at the Texas Trail, a saloon. You know what they think about me.
Well, I... Will you go, Kitty?
No.
I'll call by for you at 7, huh?
I'll drink a bottle of whiskey and clout some old biddy on the head. Then you'll be sorry.
Oh, Kitty.
I haven't got anything to wear, Matt. I can't wear my working clothes.
You look just fine, like you are, Kitty. Just fine, just like you are.
Marshall.
Yeah.
I shouldn't, but I guess I'll go to the dance with you. I'll be ready at 7.
How do you talk about a woman like Kitty? The color of her hair, eyes, the shape of her leg, the way she spoke, thought. Well, that's a picture you had to get by looking and hearing, otherwise you'd never know it. And I felt real good about taking Kitty to the party. The first time we'd really be out in company. And I liked the idea.
Morning, Mr. Dillon.
Good morning, Jester.
Nice day.
What is that?
That, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, all over my desk, that. Ink.
Yes, sir, I know. I was just cleaning it up, Mr. Dillon. Seemed like a big blue bottle fly, last of its kind this fall, I guess. Big fool blue bottle fly was a-setting on your desk, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, you're slopping it all over the floor, Chester.
Yes, sir, I see it. That lazy fool blue bottle fly was a-stomping all over your desk, Mr. Dillon, and I took a whack at him with a paper I happened to have in my hand, and I got him.
Well, thanks a lot.
Well, that's all right, Mr. Dillon. If there's anything in this world I hate, it's a big maggoty blue bottle
fly. Yeah, I know, Chester. The mail come in yet?
Yes, sir. A couple of minutes ago. It's right over there.
Oh, okay.
There. I think that should do it, Mr. Dillon.
All right, Chester.
Anything likely in the mail, Mr. Dillon?
No. Look, Chester, we better get these government circulars posted. Would you do that for me?
Yes, sir, I'll do that. Say, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, what is it, Chester?
About the dance tomorrow.
Now, what about it?
Well, you're going, aren't you, sir? Doc's going. He's taking Ms. McNish. I'm going. Everybody's going. You are going, aren't you, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, I'm going.
Don't seem right, a man here standing not to go to a big social like we're... You are?
Yes.
Well, that's fine. just fine. Doc and me, we were talking, and it just didn't seem right to us that a man like you didn't have no real nice sweet girl to escort to a big social.
I got one, Chester. A real nice sweet girl. I'm taking Kitty.
Miss Kitty?
I asked her before I came down, and she accepted.
Well, that's good. Miss Kitty,
That's right, Chester. I got a couple of letters off to Washington, Chester. You want to go and see about posting those circulars, huh?
Yes, Mr. Dillon.
Ah, fine.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah. Oh, what is it, Chester?
Well, Mr. Dillon, it ain't none of my business, and I did not have no right to say it.
Say what?
Well, sir, I...
Yeah?
I was wondering if I might borrow one of them fancy ties off you for the party.
That's not your business. That's what you haven't got any right to say.
Yes, sir. No, that's right.
You're a liar, Chester. But you can borrow a tie.
I thank you kindly, Mr. Dillon.
You work for a long time with a man, and you share a lot of life and a lot of death. And after a while, you know him even better than yourself. Well, that's the way it is with Chester and with me. Now, he had something on his mind, and I figured after a while he'd get it off. Well, the morning went, and it was almost noon when Chester came back.
Gonna go have some dinner, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, I think I will. How about you?
Hungry as a raggle-bone possum.
Did you get the posters up?
Yes, sir.
Well, okay, let's go.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah.
I guess there's something you ought to know, sir. There's talk.
Yeah. All right, Chester, come on, get it out.
It's all over town. About you taking Miss Kitty to the dance tomorrow night.
What do you mean, all over town? I only asked her this morning.
Yes, sir, I know. Best I can figure, Sam over at the Texas Trail must heard you and let it slip. There's been a mighty fierce mess of gum clobbering up and down all over.
All right. Thanks for telling me, Chester.
It ain't none of my business.
Yeah, I know. You said that before.
Yes, sir. I surely did.
Well, let's go get something to eat. It's hard to tell about people. Maybe it's hard to tell about yourself because you come under that same heading, people. And when they're mean and small, there's not an animal to touch them. Chester and I walked down the street, and it didn't take long to hear and see what was going on. Some of the drifters leaning against the wall on the corner came right out with it.
Morning, Marshal. I understand there's a Galentine's got herself a new boat.
What did you say?
Maybe you ought to look into it, Marshal. Folks are being downright rude.
Mister, you're gonna... Come on, Chester.
Hey, you see his face?
Ought to haul him in. Everyone.
Yeah. What are you gonna charge him with?
Pestilence, Mr. Dillon. Just plain pestilence.
I knew better what Kitty had meant about the ladies of the town when a couple came out of Olivet's dry goods store. They didn't see me until it was too late.
I'm going to complain to the dance committee. It's indecent, that's what it is. Why, she's common. Nothing but a common saloon woman. What's this city coming to when a United States Marshal... Ooh.
Morning, Miss Sprinkle. When a man's born, they say he's blessed or cursed with a lot of things already in him. Take pride, for instance. Sometimes pride can be a curse. Well, maybe I had more in my share. Maybe it would have been a sight kinder if I'd not taken Kitty to the dance. But I did. We will return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, this hint for weekend driving. Whatever you do, be moderate. Be obedient to all traffic laws. Be careful. Use your head and don't take chances. Now for the second act of Gunsmoke. Picked up Kitty at the Texas Trail at 7 the next evening. She was waiting by the side door, and when I saw her, she kind of moved back in the shadows, almost as though she was ashamed for me to see her. Hi.
Hello, Matt.
Are you all set?
Well, I guess so. Matt, are you sure?
Hey,
you're...
Kitty, you look fine. Yeah, you look just fine.
Do you like it?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. We walked along the street down to the hall, and I kept looking at her like I say, you know, you had to know this Kitty to understand what I mean, and even then you get a surprise. She was like a 17-year-old on her first date, and she was like all the women you'd ever known and loved, soft and innocent. And something else, something that's female and you can't figure out what. Something that makes you drunk without a drink inside you. It was snowing a little, and the flakes caught in her hair and melted into the black of her velvet cloak. And just before we went in, I looked at her again. And I didn't care. I was proud she was with me.
Oh, evening, Marshal Dillon.
Evening, Miss Murfin. You know Miss Russell?
I do. You have your tickets, Marshal Dillon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Here we are.
Fine. Go right in, won't you?
Oh, sure.
Oh, excuse me, Mrs. Murfin. Is there somewhere I can put my cloak? Oh, yes, of course. The ladies' reception room is right through there. I didn't catch the name.
Catherine Russell, ma'am. Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah, sure. I'll wait for you.
Thanks. You better.
I could see them through the big open doors in the hall. They were all there. Faces flushed, smiling, happy, dancing. And all the women seemed pretty and the men handsome. And Chester was up on the platform calling the dance, and Doc was fiddling. And I was waiting for my dancing partner, Miss Kitty Russell. Along.
I'm sorry, Matt. I had a skirmish with one of the genteel females in there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why so she? You know, I get the idea I'm not welcome around here.
Let's go in and get some punch, huh?
Sure.
How are you, John? Oh, that's a nice dress, Kitty.
I haven't worn it since a few years back in New Orleans.
Hey, Marshal. Oh, Miss Kitty.
It's Doc.
Well, how are you?
Oh, fine, Doc.
Hello, Doc.
I
Say, we got a bottle of whiskey outside. You care to join us? Oh, this punch.
Not right now, thank you.
No. Oh, well, sure. See, Miss Kitty, I saw you come in. Best looking woman in here. Oh, there's lots of scratching going on.
Thank you, Doc.
If you see Mrs. McNish, don't tell her where I am, will you? Man gets kind of dry fiddling. Oh, well, so long.
So long, Doc.
Punch, Marshal Dillon?
Kitty?
I guess so.
Mr. Sprinkle, have you met Miss Catherine Russell? No, I'm afraid I haven't.
You got a short memory, Mr. Sprinkle.
Huh?
I could have swore it was you in the Texas Trail a couple of weeks back. Drunker nor hoot owl. Don't you remember I had to slap your face?
I think...
Edward?
Edward? Yes, dear.
You let somebody else take care of the punch. I want you to come with me.
Oh, well, I promised. I'm on the committee.
Even, Miss Sprinkle.
I have no wish to speak to you, Marshal Dillon, or this woman you've brought with you. I will not have my husband serving such people.
Aren't you being a trifle bad-mannered, Miss Sprinkle?
How dare you say that?
Well, aren't you?
I suggest that you leave, Marshal.
Emmy.
You're not wanted here. Not with that woman you've seen fit to bring.
Come on, Matt. I want to go.
No. This is a public dance, Miss Sprinkle. Right now, you're trying to make it private. If you can't behave like a lady, I'll thank you to leave this lady's presence.
What? Now, see here, Marshal. You can't talk like that to my wife.
Hey, Kitty! What do you say, Kitty?
Matt, please. I want to go.
We're not going anywhere. We're staying.
How about some music? All right now, folks. It'll be a waltz.
This what? Time.
Waltz!
For the punch, Mr. Sprinkle. Come on, Kitty.
I warned you, Matt. Now, please, will you take me out of here before something happens?
Nothing's gonna happen, Kitty. You and me are gonna dance. Have a good time, that's all.
You're acting like a kid. Matt, it won't work. I've seen this kind of thing before.
May I have this dance, Miss Kitty?
Please, Matt. You're being pig-headed, and you know it. Let's get out.
You're refusing me, Miss Kitty?
Oh, Matt.
We danced. But it wasn't what I hoped it'd be. Kitty closed her eyes. I guess she was trying to blot it out. But I could see the other couples looking, whispering, and one by one dropping away over into a small group that got larger. There were only about six of us left when the waltz ended. That's when the stranger and a couple of his pals walked out onto the floor. They were drifters, probably been in town for a week. And they were having their fun before they moved on.
Marshal, I got a painful duty.
Yeah?
Folks in this town seem real upset about you bringing that... woman in here.
What's your name?
I'm just a fella. I kind of made myself and my friends here a committee of three, seeing as how everything's done by committees here, and we figured it would be best if you take your friend home.
Mister, I'm the marshal in Dodge City, and
I'm leaving.
You're staying here, Kitty.
She's smarter than you, Marshal.
Everything all right?
Everything's fine, Chester.
Now, this ain't a matter of law, you know, Marshal. It's decency and what's right.
So.
Yeah, and Marshal, this ain't right.
Mister, I'm taking this badge off. Chester, you stay here with Kitty.
Matt, don't you do it.
Now, come
Matt.
On outside. You... We're going to talk some more about this out there.
Ah, it's cold outside. Now, you be a good fella and get out of where you ain't wanted.
You know I won't hit you in here, don't you?
Were you thinking of doing that, Marshal? Now, that ain't lawful. I ain't done nothing.
No. Kitty. Kitty, wait.
Now, there's a gal with sense.
All right, mister. Now, I'm telling you. You and your pals are going to have to come out sooner or later, and when you do, you better start hightailing it out of Dodge before I catch up with you.
We'll think of that.
Oh, sure.
We sure will. Marshal.
Kitty. Just three no-good drifters, hating the law, finding pleasure in trouble. Kitty had gone, and I went out into the street. It had stopped snowing. Just cold. Much colder. I went up to the Texas Trail. There was only two people in there. Some guy dead drunk on a table, and someone else standing at the bar, looking into the mirror at me.
What'll you have, Mr. Dillon?
Nothing, Sam.
Yeah. Well, I got some things to do in the back. Give me a call if anyone comes in, will you?
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry, Kitty.
Oh, shut up.
I'm sorry.
Matt.
Oh, Kitty. Oh, it's all right. Sure, it's all right.
I'm so mad. I could...
Yeah, I know.
I should have known better.
No, it was me, not you. No, it wasn't that either. It was all those polite ladies and gentlemen.
Give me a kerchief, man.
Yeah. Here.
It's been a long time since I cried.
Yeah, sure.
It wasn't so much for me as for you. I wanted to cry right there in the hall, watching you and knowing there was nothing you could do.
Nice mess of people we got from Dodge.
No, it's not them, Matt. It's me. I've run into this before. The only difference was I didn't have you around. I wanted it to be right tonight because of you.
A lot of narrow-minded prayer spouting.
Yeah. They hurt your pride, didn't they?
No. No, it wasn't that.
No?
No, I wanted you to go with me.
That made me real happy. But maybe we're different, Matt. You and me figure life different to them. That's not their fault. There's a lot of folks there I know. I smile at them on the street. They talk to me. But tonight, well, that was different. I made them uncomfortable.
Yeah? Well, they didn't do a bad job with you.
Oh, you can't look at it that way. And you can't go fighting the whole town either.
There's three fellas gonna get hurt.
No, I don't want you to do that, Matt. You just let it go. Let it go, Matt. They don't mean nothing. You know what means something to me?
What?
That you asked me to go to the dance with you. I knew what was going to happen, but it was worth the chance. I thank you for it, Matt.
You're a funny one.
Am I?
But you sure showed them up, those women, the way you look.
Well, I'm glad. You know, you look pretty fine yourself.
Sam?
Yeah?
You got any champagne, Sam?
What? Have I got any what?
Champagne.
Well, yeah. I guess maybe. A bottle or two? Yeah, maybe. Sure.
Well, break it out.
All right.
Miss Kitty, I think the next dance is mine.
Oh, Matt. I'd be real pleased, Mr. Dillon.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Anthony Ellis, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were John Daner, Vivi Janis, Bob Sweeney, Lawrence Dobkin, and Mary Lansing. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNair is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Don't miss Robert Trout and his timely roundup of world news tomorrow on most of these same CBS radio stations. Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, Amos and Andy are here every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network.
Some hoedown music, or maybe that's an ill-advised choice of words. What an amazing episode of Gunsmoke. And to think it still had, a dozen years or so to run on the radio, but there it is. Kitty. Amazing script. Who was that? John Meston? Yeah, should be right here in front of my face. Oh, Anthony Ellis. Anthony Ellis, of course. Well, Gunsmoke, our ongoing series, it's been running now, well, at least 32 weeks. I can easily see this stretching out to a year. At least through the first season. You're tuned to the Golden Age of Radio. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming around the world at WBAI.org. I'm your host, Max Schmid, and I now must take a few moments, or a half hour or so, to ask for your support to keep this wonderful radio station, WBAI, on the air. What is this, our third fundraising effort in the month of February? Well, there's a good chance we won't be with you next week, but that may depend on how well we could perform this evening. Me doing the begging and you doing the giving. What is it Simon Lokely used to say? Before begging, it's a good, it's wise to practice on statues. A quote from somebody. We'll have to look that up. So, don't have a hard heart, don't have a heart of stone when I ask for you to become a listener sponsor of WBAI, because we need everyone to pitch in to keep the radio station alive. It's been a wonderful effort here at the station, behind the scenes of people rallying to save the station and urging people to vote. If you've gotten a ballot, I can't tell you how to vote. I cannot tell you how to vote in the Pacifica bylaws kerfuffle. Some call it bylaws revisions. It's actually a bylaws replacement. I can tell you that the entire local station board voted against these changes to the structure of how Pacifica is run. And I am one of those board members who all voted no. Not that I can tell you what to do. But if you're a member now and receive a ballot or have received a ballot, I hope you study the issues, pay attention, and it is important for New York to have a strong showing because they're rallying the troops like mad out in California, where some people might stand to benefit from certain outcomes. But we need to have a strong showing for that reason and more. WBAI needs to become a sustainable entity in the Pacifica network, which we have not been for a while. What this means is we need to double the number of people who sponsor the radio station and keep it alive. That's why I ask you week after week and reach a few people every week. But now, you know, wait, some of you with the hard hearts and hard heads, it's time for you to do your part because, you know, over the last year, many of the regular folks, regular contributors to the station have come through. Now we need the rest of you to start putting some money forward to keep WBAI alive and thriving, or at least alive. I don't think we'll ever be thriving. It's always something around here. That today we had a program just before mine, and we discovered that the phone lines are not working, which means that the we had two phone guests. We could not call in. We could not call out. They could not call in. We need to get these things addressed so that we can carry out normal everyday radio station type operations. And that requires money to make those repairs, to put in the proper infrastructure. So if you can become a member of this radio station, it's as little as $25 a year. Makes you a voting member as long as we have voting. That's one of the benefits of your membership. You get some say in the way things are run. And if that means nothing to you, you don't really care, and I, you know, wouldn't surprise me if most of you don't. Well, it still means you're keeping the radio station on the air. 516-620-3602. This station that you tune in, maybe for Gunsmoke every week. Or maybe for whatever else we can bring you on a weekly basis here on the Golden Age of Radio. Well, if it wasn't for WBAI, there would be no Golden Age of Radio. Because, we've been on this, on these airwaves since 1976. Not me. I didn't come on board until 1977. And I've been producing the show ever since and hosting it since December of 1978. Somebody should throw me a party or buy me a drink. But instead of that, become a listener sponsor while we're on the air. Do it in the name of the Golden Age of Radio. Do it. Be my buddy. How's that? If you would like to become a sustaining member of this radio station, you can be my buddy. That's what we call sustaining members who commit to $10 a month or more for the course of a year. The money is spread out over that year, $10 a month or whatever amount you designate, taken out of your credit card or your bank account. You only have to make the pledge once, but it's a gift that keeps on giving. It lets us know how much money we have at any particular time of the year. 516-620-3602. Now, we also have a few thank you gifts. Same ones we've been offering the last couple of weeks. First of all, a wildly popular premium called the Golden Age 2019 Convention flash drive. It's only a $60 pledge, and you get 60 hours or more of old-time radio programming. Let's say I just plug one in. My dear pal Matt, who fulfills all the premiums, has cranked out. He's been busy cranking these things out. There's a whole bin of them on his desk that are ready to go in the mail. As soon as he gets the labels from the manager. Now, if you pledge for it during this February drive, chances are we haven't gotten to your, we're not that far in the process yet. But if you pledge for it in December or in September, we've offered this twice before, and they will be coming to you in the mail directly. They're made for those folks. And you will continue to crank them out. I told them, we need at least 10 more for this fun drive. But if you're expecting this, you should be receiving it shortly, if you pledged in the past. What is it, you ask? Well, it's the equivalent of 60 discs. 60 CDs and MP3 discs of newly discovered old-time radio programming. A lot of mystery, a lot of cops, a lot of detectives, a lot of serials, a lot of kid shows, a lot of westerns, a lot of everything. Well, not so much comedy, quiz, and music, but they are represented. But we have one whole folder of crimes, cops, and detectives. One folder of horror and mystery, and a fourth folder, westerns, serials, kids, and adventure, all lumped together. So it's 60 hours, might be closer to 100 hours, because a lot of the MP3 discs have multiple hours on them. So like 32 episodes of The Whistler, for example. Many episodes of The Inner Sanctum, The Lost Shadow episode, The Lost Rare Avenger show. Some of these things we have played, but most of it we have not had a chance to play on the air, just because there's so darn much of it. And for a $60 pledge, our thank you gift to you is this entity that we call the Convention 2019 Flash Drive, Golden Age Flash Drive, Convention 2019. When you ask for it, ask for some combination of those terms. They should be able to find it fairly handily. 516-620-3602. So as I say, we're cranking them out, and they'll be on the way to you very shortly. 516-620-3602. You can also find it on the pledge site, give2wbai.org. Give2wbai.org. Search for Golden Age in the little search box, and you'll see everything that we've got available. We're only going to talk about that Convention 2019 flash drive this evening for a $60 pledge. We also will be talking about the Black History 2 CD set. That's a $75 pledge, and you get two discs jam-packed with programming aimed at or produced by or featuring black entertainers from the era of the Golden Age of radio. One disc is 61 episodes of the Black Biography series, Destination Freedom, and we will be hearing an episode of that coming up, within 10 minutes or so. The story of James Weldon Johnson and his anti-lynching campaign. It's called The Poet of Pine Mill. It's the 11th episode of the series from September 5th, 1948. So that will be coming up. And that's just one of 61 episodes. The biographies run the gamut of historical figures, modern-day science figures, people in the arts, from Langston Hughes to Joe Louis, to Satchel Paige, to George Washington Carver, Matthew Henson, you name it, and chances are it may be among the surviving 61 episodes of the series. They did, I think, closer to 100, but all of them have not, unfortunately, survived. So you get every one that I've been able to lay my hands on. And that's just disc one of this two-disc Black History package. The second disc consists of a Canada Lee series called New World A-Comin'. At least 30 episodes of that series right here from New York City. Destination Freedom was in Chicago and was not heard, unfortunately, outside of Chicago. It was a local production with a black writer and many black people in the cast, including Oscar Brown Jr., Fred Pinkard, and a host of others. I think in this episode today, Hugh Downs, once again the announcer. So, that will be coming your way shortly, and you can hear it and all the other episodes of the series when you pledge for the Black History Package, two MP3 discs. And there's just so much more in there. You get Orson Welles talking about injustices just post-war, I believe, 1946. You get from the same period, Jack Webb railing against Senator Bilbo. Perhaps you've heard of him, and if you haven't, well, then you need to hear the Jack Webb program castigating the fellow. Kind of the Trump of his day. You can get all this for a $75 pledge to WBAI by calling 516-620-3602. And we would like to hear from some people. I will thank you personally when we see your pledges come in. 516-620-3602. At the moment, no pledges are coming in. Someone asked, is something awry at WBAI? I just tuned in to listen to your show and I can't get any sound either from WBAI website or TuneIn Radio. Well, that's interesting. Am I being heard? Are we off the air? If we are, it's news to me. The stream was working in the other end of the station. So I don't know if this is related to phone lines. Maybe there's a Verizon issue. But I'm getting the stream. The only way we can hear the station or around the rest of the facility is on the stream. Oh, I do have a little radio, but I was hearing it fine, so I don't know what the problem is. Hopefully, it's isolated to Sue's neighborhood. Uh, 7:49, this is the golden age of radio. Week 3, the last day of week 3 of our winter fun drive here with WBAI. I don't think it's going great, but I don't think it's going that poorly either. However, tonight, so far, we've had no showing from listeners to this program. So assuming we're on the air and on the stream, if we're on the stream, you know, I want some of you out-of-towners to come through. You know, you don't have to live in New York City to appreciate WBAI. If you're listening to it, clearly there's something in it for you. 516-620-3602. Needing to get some pledges in here. Pledges of support to keep WBAI on the air. 516-620-3602. We need to hear from you. We still have to come an episode of Dr. Tim Detective and our episode of Destination Freedom. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to go troubleshoot and make sure that we are actually broadcasting. I know we have no phone lines in or out. Hopefully that's the extent of our current difficulties. Your pledges go a long way to remedy these various difficulties.
Okay, so let's listen to the story of James Weldon Johnson on Destination Freedom, episode number 11, September 5th, 1948. And we'll return after this is over, hopefully, to thank people for making pledges to WBAI. 516-620-3602.
Freedom, oh, freedom, oh, freedom over me. And before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Destination Freedom. The Chicago Defender and station WMAQ bring you Destination Freedom, a new radio series dramatizing the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, interwoven in the pageant of history and a part of America's own Destination Freedom. Today, Destination Freedom tells the story of James Weldon Johnson, poet, educator, and lobbyist, in a chapter entitled Poet in Pine Mill.
My name is Johnson, James Weldon Johnson. In Florida, men knew me as an editor and a lawyer. In New York, I was a poet and a writer of songs. In Venezuela, I was a consul for my country. But in Washington in 1920, men knew me as a lobbyist with a new bill in my briefcase, for the outline of a law against lawlessness. No one had brought it up before. I took it to a friend I had in the Senate. He thought about it. He looked it over.
A bill to outlaw lynching, is it? You expect me to sponsor a bill to outlaw lynching, Johnson?
That's why I'm here.
But you can't stop lynching with a law no more than you can stop murder.
Well, there's a law against murder. What is lynching?
Murder in a way, but still this is too new. Nobody in the Senate will support it.
When they see and feel the thing I've seen, they will.
I don't know, Johnson. I know we've just finished a war and things are unsettled. Race riots in East St. Louis and Chicago and lynchings. What's at the bottom of it, I don't know, but it's too early for your bill.
He said too early, but I knew it was late. It was past time to save lives with a law to end lynching. I went from friend to friend until I came into the room of an old senator who was wise and said,
"Yes, I've heard of this anti-lynch bill you're carrying around. Maybe it belongs before the people. Let's see it."
"Well, it's not much but a pile of facts I've been gathering. It's just some figures to prove that..."
"Figures won't prove anything. It'll take more than figures. It'll take the story behind the figures. Have you got that?"
"I've got that, too."
"Oh, good, good. Then suppose you put it down for me to see. Now, when you talk of murder, you've got to talk of the people who are the victims. You've got to know the motive, and you've got to know who profits by it. You've got to know the human side. Now, you tell me how you started on this, and I'll tell you what I can do."
I sat down and put aside the dates and figures on the men and women who'd lost their lives by lynch law. I sat down to write out a story, not of them, but of myself and people I'd known. I wrote of the day in 1917 when I came home to my aging father like a prodigal son. I'd been away from Florida for a long time. The town, the people, and their homes looked the same.
"Hey, please."
"Oh, yes, sir."
"Hey, please."
The conductor and the fare were the same. But when I went to sit down, there was something different.
"Say, where do you think you're sitting?"
"In an empty seat."
"The seats up front are for white people. Colored seats in the back."
"Colored seats?"
"Now, no arguing. It's a new law. Whites in the front, the blacks in back. It's the law. You get it?"
I got about it. And then I saw that the people were changing, too. When you put a fence around a whole people, there'll be outbreaks. And in my town, they came every day, wherever the color line was drawn. I wondered what to do. Then I heard that some people in Pine Mill, a town in Georgia, wanted a school teacher. I told my father I was leaving.
Why, son, you'll be going from the frying pan into the fire. Now, stay here, son.
What can I do here?
What can a man like you, who's lived his life in big cities and in Europe and South America, do in barren backwoods village in the Georgia hills?
Maybe I can move the fence back further, just a little.
Son, you'll be hanged if you do.
Then I'll be hanged.
You had an easy life, son. Too easy to begin taking on a hard job. Now, think careful while you can, son. Think careful.
I thought carefully. Then I caught a train to Georgia. I rode out to live with people I'd known only in books, only through what I'd heard. When the train stopped, I stood in the station overlooking a patch of run-down homes and farms. A clerk and a sheriff watched me as the train pulled out. I walked towards the small restroom and the sheriff spoke.
Lester, didn't you say this was that teaching fella they sent out here?
Yeah, he must be the one, Sheriff.
Well, then a teacher ought to be able to read.
I can read.
That sign says white only. You're walking into the wrong room.
Oh, I see it.
Then obey it. That's the law in Pine Mill. As long as you're here, you'll obey it. Would you come to teach anyway?
Depends on who I teach.
You'll teach him to respect the laws. If you came for trouble, you'll find it. We got enough kicking against the segregation laws without outsiders adding to it.
And that was my introduction to my new home. For a minute, I looked toward the train that was disappearing, and I gripped my bags and went looking for the Negro minister who had advertised for a teacher. I found him in his church with his board members. They'd been waiting for me. They looked me over carefully. They were a little suspicious of me, but finally the minister said,
"Well, you're a city fellow, Johnson. But we will have you if you're willing. All right, Mr. Baines?"
"Yeah, city fellows, they don't stick out here. They ain't got to fight. They're scared easy. I don't know."
Now, he's quite all right, I expect. My boy Lim seems to like him."
"Sure, he's all right, Ma. He must be. The sheriff wants to run him out."
"Then we'll take you teaching, mister. Baines will fix up the school for you in a week. Then you'll start your classes."
Reverend Elder?"
"Yes, Baines?"
"I think we'd better tell him about the pay."
"Oh, yes. How much you figuring on charging, mister?"
"Well, I thought maybe, if it wouldn't be too much, about..."
"Well, speak up. We mighty liberal folks around here, but remember, money don't grow on trees."
"Well, I was thinking maybe, if it wouldn't be too much, maybe a weekly wage of about..."
"A weekly wage for teaching?"
"Well, yes, I thought that..."
"Yeah, see what I tell you. Man looking for a weekly wage won't work out in the backwoods country. Just won't work out."
"Well, what will be the pay?"
"The last teacher got a nickel a head."
"Nickel a head?"
"Mighty generous offer. Nickel a head a day for each student you teach. That's the custom in Pine Mill."
"Sure, give you something to work for. Go into the field and bring them into the class. Now, isn't that right, General?"
"Well, I guess so."
"That's fine.
Now you'll be needing a place to put up while you live in Pine Mill. Miss Borden?"
"Be proud to have you, Reverend Elder. Your room and board will be at my place. Nobody there but me and my boy, Lim. Help him with his bags, Lim."
"Sure, Ma. All right. Ooh, what's in them? Make them so heavy, Professor."
"Just a few books, Lim. And thank you for putting me up, ma'am."
"Don't mention it. Come on, Lim. He's got to get used to Pine Mill. Hurry now." "Now, you'll take your bath on Friday so I can wash my clothes Saturday, and we'll get along just fine."
"Naturally, ma'am, naturally."
"Lord, but you are skinny. The city didn't do right by you at all. Gave you culture, but no muscles. We'll wait and taste my muffins, too. They'll put the pounds on you."
Mrs. Borden went off to get the pounds ready for me. I walked about the little town wondering what to teach and where to start. I came home hungry enough to eat anything except Mrs. Borden's muffins. she was a most unorthodox cook.
You don't mind me using your cologne, do you, Professor?
Oh, no, not at all.
Just needed a little bit to flavor my muffins. My flavoring's all gone. I knew you wouldn't mind.
I discovered my landlady was the gayest, but the worst cook in the county. Her muffins smelled like my cologne, but seemed a bit heavy.
You're not eating, Mr. Johnson.
I'm trying to, ma'am.
He can't seem to swallow, Ma. Wait, I'll help you. There. A good whack on the back will do it. Yes, the professor, you're going to get used to 5 meal yet. Yeah.
Getting used to fine meal was getting tougher as the days went by. I had to get used to Mrs. Borden's muffins. Then I had to get used to lamb. But first he got used to me, watching me brush my teeth.
Well. A little toothbrush keep your teeth clean, Professor.
Well. Lem believed in trying new things. I asked him the next morning, Lem, is that by any chance my toothbrush you're using? Lem?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, never mind.
I'm all through, Professor. Better my homemade one. Here, I'm all done.
No, Lem. In fact, I'm going to make you a gift of it. Hereafter, it's all yours. But I did get to like Lem and Mrs. Borden's food, and they seemed to like me. I never did get used to the Jim Crow law splitting one farm family from another. Neither did Lem.
You never quite get to believe in Jim Crow is real, Professor. You never quite believe it's here to stay. But some folks think it is. What are you going to teach about it, Professor?
It was real, all right. There was strange tension in the town between the Negro and white sharecroppers. There were no schools for the white children in Pine Mill. But when I struck the iron bar to bring my class into the little one-room shanty, only Negro children could come. They came from the fields and farms, and they were not all children. There were men and women among them. They listened to my first lessons, and when class was over, Lem and I rode home, two on a mule. Lem was thoughtful.
Professor.
Yes, Lem?
Ma says you've been in every country in the world.
Your mother means I've been outside the country.
Oh, what's it like outside?
Where outside?
Anywhere. Is there colored and white signs in New York?
No.
Then how'd they get here?
Well, a few men put them up to keep people divided, Lem. They segregate races so they'll grow up thinking they're natural-born enemies. Then they'll always be enemies to each other. That's Jim Crow.
Then how do you get rid of the signs?
It takes a lot of people working together to bring them down. You want to go where there is no Jim Crow, Lem? I'll tell you where to go.
Never mind. Before I go anywhere else, the signs in Pine Mill have to come down first.
I took Lem home that evening and many evenings, and slowly the city armor I had on wore off. Came off one evening when the Reverend Elder came to take me to his church.
You coming, Mr. Johnson?
Well, I'm not much of a churchgoer, Reverend. I'd rather stay at home.
You're perfectly right, Mr. Johnson. Reverend, he comes home tuckered out after sitting down in school all day.
Well, if you're too tired, well, it doesn't matter.
Well, if you'll excuse me this time, Reverend, I'm sure that...
Sure he will. Now come and eat your supper, Professor. Lord, but you're still skinny. I fixed muffins tonight, and I'm sure they'll spark you up. They usually do. Now come to the kitchen.
Reverend, maybe I should go to church tonight. Yes, I think I'd better go along. Thanks to the Borden muffins, I went along that night to the old church of the Reverend Elder. I sat on a bench in the back, and then the sermon began. The minister had said it was an old folk sermon, and I was half listening when he began.
Brothers and sisters, we have a new soul in Pine Mill. He's seen the spirits and souls of people everywhere. Tonight,
I'll tell him our story of the creation.
Amen.
And God stepped out on space, and he looked around and he said, I'm lonely. I'll make me a world. And as far as the eye of God could see, darkness covered everything, blacker than 100 midnights down in a cypress swamp. Then God smiled, and the light broke, and the darkness rolled up on one side, and the light stood shining on the other. And God said, that's good. Then God reached out and took the light in his hands and rolled the light around in his hands until he made the sun. And he set the sun ablazing in the heaven.
Thank you, Lord.
And the light that was left from making the sun, God gathered it up in a shining ball and flung it against the darkness, spangling the night with the moon and the stars.
Thank you, Lord.
Then down between the darkness and the light, he hurled the world. And God said, that's good.
That's good, Lord.
Then God himself stepped down, and the sun was on his right hand, and the moon was on his left. The stars were clustered about his head, and the earth was under his feet.
Hallelujah.
And God walked, and where he trod, his footsteps hollowed the valleys out and bulged the mountains up.
Glory, Lord.
Then he stopped, and he looked, and he saw that the earth was hard and barren. So God stepped over to the edge of the world, and he spat out the seven seas.
Praise.
He batted his eyes, and the lightning flashed. He clapped his hands and the thunder rolled.
Glory.
And the waters about the earth came down.
Yes, Lord.
The cooling waters came down.
Thank you, Lord.
Then the green grass sprouted and the red flowers blossomed.
Yes.
The pine tree pointed his finger to the sky, and the oak spread out his arms. The lakes cuddled down in the hollows of the ground, and the rivers ran down to the sea. And God smiled again, and the rainbow appeared.
Yes, Lord.
And curled itself around his shoulders.
Yes, Lord.
Then God walked around, and God looked around on all that he had made. He looked at his sun, and he looked at his moon, and he looked at his little stars.
Yes, Lord.
He looked on his world with all its living things, and he said, I'm lonely still.
Yes, Lord.
Then God sat down on the edge of the hill where he could think.
Yes,
by a deep, wide river, he sat down with his head in his hands. God thought, and he thought, till he thought, I'll make me a man. And up from the bed of the river,
yes,
he scooped the clay. And by the bank of the river, he kneeled him down.
Yes,
and there the great God Almighty,
yes,
who lit the sun and fixed it in the sky,
yes,
who flung the stars to the most far corner of the night,
yes,
who rounded the earth in the middle of his hand.
Yes, Lord.
This great God, like a mother bending down over her baby, kneeled down in the dust, toiling over a lump of clay till he shaped it in his own image.
Glory, glory.
Then he blew the breath of life, and man became a living soul.
Thank you, Lord.
Amen. Amen.
Amen.
Down the poetry of the sermons and set them to music. And I remained in Pine Mill watching the students spring up and get a grip on the lessons I gave. Lem was outgrowing the town. He and his mother were sharecroppers for a landlord up in the county. Lem hadn't forgotten that outside Pine Mill were other towns where people lived nearly free and equal. I remember how Mrs. Borden worried about the change that was coming over him. One rainy night when we sat at the supper table.
Land sakes, boy, you're getting like the professor, not eating much. More biscuits?
I got enough, Ma.
I'm sick and tired of your saying you got enough before you start. What's got into you, Lem?
Ma.
Yes?
I'm thinking of quitting sharecropping. Quitting and getting out of Pioneer, Ma.
You feeling well, son?
Better than I felt in a long time. If we quit now, Ma, and go somewhere, perhaps we can...
Well, you can't quit before you pay the landlord what they say we owe.
We'll never pay them. The more you crop cotton, the more you'll owe. So I'm quitting this week, Ma. I'm telling the landlord to take what's his and let us go.
Now, Lem, with your temper, when you tell him we're leaving, you'll be getting into a fight with him.
Thought you said you'd stick it out here, Lem.
I did say it. Said I'd stick until the Jim Crow signs were down. Before I leave, they'll come down. I won't be in class tomorrow, Professor. I'll be squaring things with the landlord.
The next day, I went to my classroom worried and anxious about Lem's leaving. I got home early and waited with Mrs. Borden until he came. He came quiet. His steps were slow.
Lem, what'd they say?
I'll be all right, Ma. We're leaving.
What'd they say, though?
Said we're leaving. That enough?
I guess it is. But, oh, Lem, you hurt.
Be quiet, Ma. You should see the landlord. I had to do it. Everything will be all right from now on. Professor, I'll be in class tomorrow. Come rain or shine.
It kept raining, and Lem came to class in the shanty. It turned out to be his last class day in Pine Mill. It turned out to be mine, too. As I sat there reading to the class from the story of Tom Paine, Lem sat listening and looking at the door. The lesson of all the ages is that a wrong done to one man is a wrong done to all men. Any citizen liable to be hanged for a crime is entitled to vote for his ruler, to move about freely and in accordance with the law of equal rights.
Just a minute there, teacher.
Yes, sir.
One of your pupils is wanted by the law, teacher.
For what?
Assault with intent to kill. His landlord filed a complaint. Now, shall it be peaceful like Professor, or shall we take him out the right way?
Never mind, Sheriff. He's getting out of his seat. Coming on his own. Won't be no trouble.
Lem, wait. I'll go with
him. Nah, you're not coming with him. You just go on with your reading. You handle your books. We'll handle this uppity boy.
Something no one in Pine Mill ever forgot. The handling of Lem Borden led to his lynching, to a riot between the segregated sections of the little town. When it swept over, there was only a wider gap, a deeper hate, and the seeds for a new riot were planted. For everyone heard of the crime of lynching. No one heard of the guilty being punished, and he who lynched that day went free to lynch another day. When the fury was over, my school was gone. I went to Mrs. Borden. There were no tears. She blamed no one, not even me.
It's nobody's fault but the law's. Your teaching him to want what was his was right. The trouble came because you didn't teach more people. You taught the one to be lynched, not the lyncher. When will you teach the sheriff and the safe people who let the lynchers go free?
Started out looking for a way to work for an end of lynch law. I went to work for a new organization. It was the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The secretary said there was a job for me.
We got a job no one wants to take, Johnson. But it's the biggest job we've got.
Yes, go on.
It's investigating lynching.
How do you mean?
I mean we need someone who's got the nerve and daring to go into every town where there's a lynching. Mingle with the crowd, if possible. Go to the homes of the lynchers, as well as the lynched. Get the facts behind the lawlessness. Bring that to the people.
I see.
It'll be dangerous.
I can understand that.
Now, I've got two teams working on this. We use a white and a Negro reporter. We need you.
Very well. I'm your man.
Good. Now, I got word of a lynching in a little town in Georgia. You can start out today if you're packed.
Yeah, I'm packed, all right. Where's the town?
A little speck on the map called Pine Mill.
took my assignment and went down again to the torn little town. I saw how segregation bred lawlessness and encouraged lynch law. I gathered the real picture of lynching and brought it up to the association, had it published. And soon my own neck was wanted at the end of a rope. I remember one evening in Tennessee, I came into a hotel. There were men in the lobby. It was to be my last trip. At the hotel desk.
What can I do for you?
He looked out of the side of his eyes toward the hefty man watching us. I could only say, have you a room for tonight?
I expect I might have. Where are you from?
Pine Mill.
All right, your little old town. You had me worried for a while.
Yeah?
Yeah, you look sort of like the line reporter that's stirring up so much trouble. Trying to get the federal agent down here. Let's see, tall, thin, brown skin.
If you don't mind, I'd like to get a good night's rest.
Huh? Yes. Well, here's your key. Room 220, head of the stairs.
Thank you. I walked uneasily toward the stair, the men watching my steps. I knew that if I made my room, I could escape through the window. The walk from the desk seemed like the longest walk in the world. I'd almost made the steps when the clerk called.
Say, mister, you think you can get away with that?
What?
Well, you better come back here. You can't get away with it.
Can't get away with what?
You're not paying for your room, that's what. In the Lord we trust. Everyone else pays cash in front.
Oh, is that what you wanted?
I say, you're sweating like someone's been chasing you. Of course, that's all I want. What else you got?
Nothing. Here's your money.
Save your money, mister. Where you go, you won't need to pay.
The men who'd been watching had gotten behind me. I felt a gun in my back. An arm went around my neck and choked me.
You sure this is the line reporter, Ted? You sure?
Sure, I'm sure. Been training him since yesterday.
Well, now, gentlemen, if you just take him out of my hotel before you start to be quiet, you. You almost let him get by.
But you haven't asked him if he's the reporter. He may not be.
It's him, I tell you. Been watching him. Go through his pockets, Joe. His name is Johnson. James Weldon Johnson.
Yeah, his pocket's empty. Only had a few bucks on him. Maybe this ain't the guy.
So what?
So we're wasting time.
It's him, I tell you. Same size, same color.
Yeah, but them ain't the right eyes. Look at his eyes.
His grip tightened around my neck as they looked at my eyes. And it seemed like a year later, one said...
What'd I tell you? The guy we want's got to have brown eyes. This guy's got blue eyes. What'd I tell you? Let him go. We're wasting time.
It was the first time the color of my eyes saved my neck. It was my last trip in the lynch towns. I took my facts and put them to work wherever they were needed to fight discrimination. The facts proved that since 1900, more than 3,436 people had been lynched by mobs, 83 of them women. Not one lyncher has ever paid for his crime. When I finished my report to the senator, he looked it over, then looked on his calendar.
It's March 1920 now, Johnson. We'll build the first step toward an anti-lynch bill. We'll take it to Congress. It may not pass this year or next, but someday it's got to become law. You made the beginning.
Just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of James Weldon Johnson, poet, educator, and editor. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. Johnson was played by Tony Parrish. Others were Maude McElroy, Oscar Brown, Donald Gallagher, Ted Liss, Fred Pinkard, Les Spears, Lewis Vernon, Duke Watson, and Louise Pruitt. Greg Pascal was the singer. The special music was written by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Elwin Owen and Bobby Christian. The sermon on the creation is from God's Trombones by James Weldon Johnson. This is Hugh Downs inviting you to be with us again next week for another in our series on the Negro in Democracy, Destination Freedom. This is NBC.
Destination Freedom, episode number 11, 1948. Part of a premium that we are offering with your pledges of support to keep WBAI alive, our Black History 2-disc set. 61 episodes of Destination Freedom can be yours with a pledge to WBAI. And that's only half of the Black History premium. It also features, all manner of groovy stuff. which, as soon as my page opens, I'll tell you about. Well, so the first disc is 61 episodes of Destination Freedom by Richard Durham. Disc 2, Black History Radio and Civil Rights. Series of civil rights and music programs, many produced for the black audience, including New World to Common, starring Canada Lee, Orson Welles commentaries, Jubilee, produced for the black armed forces during World War II, featuring Ernest Bubbles Whitman. And let's see, what else? The Peabody Award-winning Open Letter on Race Hatred by William N. Robeson. Freedom's People, One Out of Seven. That's the Jack Webb series. And the complete Les Miserables with Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater. Speaking of social ills and a great radio drama to boot. All of that, including things like the episodes of Harlem Hospitality Club. We heard one of them last week. A lot of strange single episodes. You get the voice of George Washington Carver appearing on the radio in the 1930s. All of this for a $75 pledge. 516-620-3602. And we do have a number of people to thank who have made pledges while the program has been on. I'd like to thank you, too, but you need to pick up the phone and dial the call center, 516-620-3602, or go to our pledge site, give2wbai.org, and make a pledge there. If you prefer to do it yourself, you can use PayPal, at least on the website, maybe through the call center as well. Or we accept credit cards. We even will bill you if that's your preference. 516-620-3602. $75 for the Black History package. We also have the $60 flash drive, Golden Age Convention 2019 flash drive. We're going to hear an example of one of the hundreds of shows that are on there very shortly. We'll hear an episode of Dr. Tim Detective. I won't say it's great radio, but it's not the sort of thing you hear every day either. Is he a doctor? Is he a detective? Is it a children's show or a public service show or all those things combined? The Dr. Tim Detective. Well, we'll hear that in a bit. But in the meantime, we would like to thank a few people who have made pledges. Let's see. Did Robert want to be thanked? Well, Robert, I don't know if Robert wanted to be thanked. From Wyoming, my goodness. Well, here's somebody that would like to be thanked. Craig Wickman, our old friend. Great actor who we've heard many times on these airwaves in this program. Thank you, Craig, for always being there. And David Daniel of Newark, New Jersey, making a pledge in the name of the Golden Age of Radio. Thank you so much. And Marilyn, who makes a pledge of seemingly every week to the Golden Age of Radio. Well, thank you. Now it's your turn. I mean, that's it. That's not a lot for the first hour and a half of the program. You know, our rate of success this evening will determine whether or not we are invited back next week. I have been informed that all regular programs are preempted next week. Did you know that, David? David has arrived, and he's got a brand new premium for you, so you stay tuned. But right now, I would like to get some calls of support for this program, The Golden Age of Radio. Pledge in the name of The Golden Age of Radio. And what a proud name it is, too. 40 plus years and counting. And all because of listener sponsors like yourselves down through the centuries and the decades. 516-620-3602 to keep WBAI on the air. We need to hear from more of you. We need to hear from you rapidly, soon, and now. 516-620-3602 for a $60 pledge. You get a thumb drive, a flash drive, with the equivalent of 60 CDs and MP3 discs full of old-time radio material. 516-620-3602. You get comedy, quiz, music, crime, cops, detective, horror and mystery, westerns, kids shows, serials, and adventure. And you know, Matt, while he's copying these things, has been listening to quite a bit of it. He's enjoying the dickens out of it, and you will too. You ever hear of Deadline Mystery? We should play one someday. How about the crime cases of Warden Laws? There's an episode of Broadway Is My Beat. Sadly, there's only the first 10 minutes. Oh, I was looking forward to hearing this Big Jim McLean. James Arness is a House on American Activities investigator. An audition show, and sadly, only the first 10 minutes of it is there. You know, if we get enough pledges real fast, I could play you that first 10 minutes. A 1938 show called Attorney at Law, Adventures of Raffles, 1942. Jonathan Brixton auditioned with Michael Ruffetto and Bart Yarborough from I Love a Mystery and One Man's Family. A couple of Mr. District Attorney shows, 1948 and 49. Murder Will Out, The Swindled Songwriter. Mysterious Circumstances, an Australian program. Nick Harris Detective, an interesting program. Altar of Sacrifice. A couple of episodes of Official Detective from 1946. Police Blotter from Mystery Time. Two of those featuring Bill Zuckert. Another raffles program. This one is an audition from 1946. The Screen Mystery Club, When Strangers Marry with Otto Kruger. The Big Story, Newspaper Adventures. The Lone Wolf, the only episode of that series, which is a Christmas story, which I was planning to play this Christmas, and I think I just forgot to do it. The Queen's Men. A couple of episodes of The Thin Man. A couple of episodes of Wanted, which, as I recall, was a summer replacement for Suspense. Leonidas Witherall, the detective who looks like Shakespeare. Dyke Easter Detective. An audition program called This Time for Creeps. So that's just some of the crime and detective shows. And 8 episodes of The Lineup. Really good cop show. And Gangbusters. 4 episodes from 1937. Those are fairly rare. And 3 more episodes from the 40s. Gangbusters. Well, we like to come on like gangbusters every week. We can only do it with your support. Please call 516-620-3602 in the name of the Golden Age of Radio. You can get that thumb drive for a $60 pledge. Convention 2019, because I got it all at last year's convention. Got to make my reservations for this year's convention while the rooms are still cheap. Yeah, if you feel like traveling down to Baltimore, it's the closest you'll get to the old Friends of Old Time Radio convention. Lots of old time radio and TV and movie nostalgia. convention put on by Martin Grams, award-winning author whose new book just out about truth or consequences. But that's neither here nor there. Right now, we need you to be here for us with your calls of support. 516-620-3602 or pledge online at give2wbai.org. We've had 3 pledges. Not nearly enough. Not nearly enough. So I guess we'll be back in 2 weeks unless a whole lot of people start calling now. Yeah, we'll put off Gunsmoke for another week. 516-620-3602. Can we hear from you? Whether you're a renewing member, whether you're a new member. We always like new members. $25 is the basic membership rate for an entire year. If you love us a lot, you can become a sustaining member. Be a WBAI buddy in the name of the golden age of radio. $10 or more a month for the course of a year. And that's what you commit to, $10 a month or more, where you decide the amount. And at the end of the year, I don't know if it renews automatically or if you need to renew it. But we're asking for that commitment for 1 year. You get a lovely WBAI tote bag, which if you were listening earlier, you will need come March 1st, because no more plastic bags in New York. That's right. You'll have to pay a nickel for a bag when you're out shopping. So get the WBAI tote bag. It will replace all of your shopping carrying devices. There are other perks involved as well, but that's the most tangible one. It's something you can hold in your hand. You get discounts to museums and whatnot as well, but mainly you get the BAI tote bag. And you know, if you become a buddy of the Golden Age of Radio, maybe I'll throw some stuff into that tote bag for you as well. 516-620-3602. So whatever amount you can give, whether it's the basic $25 membership or one of the premiums, the $60 flash drive, convention 2019, with 100 hours of stuff. And Matt's been cranking them out. They're ready to go out. Or for a $75 pledge, get the Black History Package. One CD full of Destination Freedom episodes, 61 half-hour shows, just like the one we just heard. And another disc full of a wealth of assorted miscellaneous material aimed at the black radio listening audience in the 1930s and 40s. Tales from Harlem. New World of Cummins. 516-620-3602. We need to hear from some folks, and we need to hear from you soon. How can I thank you if you don't make a pledge? How can I miss you if you won't go away? Oh, wait, that's a different song. We need to hear from you now. We have not had a pledge in the 8 o'clock hour. Last pledge was at 8. 8 straight up. 35 minutes ago. It's your turn now to step forward and support the radio station that you're listening to right now. We only survive with the kindness of people who enjoy what we put on the air. We have no commercials, no underwriting, no subsidies, no nothing, no government money. It's 100%. Based on the support of our listeners that we continue to operate. So, if you like what you hear at WBAI, you need to step up to the plate and make a pledge. to ensure that we can continue to be here. We're waiting for you, basically. You're holding up the programming. I really would love for you to hear Dr. Tim. Dr. Tim, detective. But we gotta get some pledges in here. 516-620-3602. Won't you be the one? All right. Maybe you need to hear some of this before we can go ahead. Maybe this is the kind of sprightly music that will get you running to the telephone. We've been listening to the James Reese tribute to James Reese Europe's Harlem Hellfighters Band on the 100th anniversary of their Passé recordings. A group known as the America's Brass Band. That's the who we've been hearing. And now we're back to our old pals, the Bohunks, with the music of the Little Rascals. Well, don't you be a little rascal. Do your duty. Do what you should. And support WBAI, like Peggy has done. We just got a pledge from Peggy. Can we thank Peggy? Peggy Peterson. Another old friend. Okay, so we have an old friend now, but a new friend. It's your turn to step up to the plate and make that call. 516-620-3602. All right. Our technical issues apparently have been resolved, if we ever had them. The TuneIn app must have malfunctioned. That's all I can think of. But stream is on. We are on the air. I checked that out on my little radio. So there's no reason that you should not hear the sound of my voice and my appeal to you to make a pledge of support to keep WBAI alive. 516-620-3602. Do it right now, won't you? Before you forget, while it's fresh in your mind, before I stop haranguing you, 516-620-3602. All right. Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take a chance. We're going to go on faith that people will call while the program proceeds. Hopefully, I'll be back to thank more of you. Except the player is just frozen. The whole computer is just frozen. Well, as soon as we re-seize control of the computer... What's going on here? My goodness. Do we have to do it a different way? Perhaps we do. Yep. Once again, the computer has seized up, or this program has seized up. It's a pity because I just loaded up all the programming. Ah, there we go. So if we had actually been playing something from this device, it would have stopped and reset itself. All right, well, we're going to take a chance because Dr. Tim is on this same player that just froze and unfroze. This is a syndicated series from 1950. This episode apparently was broadcast on October 10th. No. October. Excuse me. October 2nd of 1950. Errors occurred. Okay, yeah, we noticed. Errors occurred. Timeout waiting for audio engine. Well, that's nice. What is the title of our little episode here? Right. It says here October 18th, 1950, the mystery of the second alarm. Dr. Tim is a combination of educational, medicine, and detective show. Dr. Tim hangs around with Sandy and Jill to two kids who are accused of trying to set a man on fire in this episode. Well, sounds pretty exciting, eh? Well, sounds can be deceiving, as you will see as we listen to Dr. Tim, Detective, here on the Golden Age of Radio, WBAI, New York.
This is Dr. Tim, Detective, to bring you by transcription, The Mystery of the Second Alarm. Well, the first caller who knocked on the door to my laboratory and consulting room one morning a few weeks ago was a woman in her early 30s who gave her name as...
I'm Mrs. Hugh A. Miller, Doctor, and I live in the next house just beyond the vacant lot.
Won't you sit down, Mrs. Miller?
Yes, thank you. I've been told that you're both a doctor and a detective.
Yes, you might call it that, but I don't, as a rule, take private cases. What is your problem?
Well, I have every reason to believe that my husband's father, who lives with us, is, well... not quite right, if you know what I mean. And in the next place, I think he's hiding a fortune.
I'm afraid I don't quite see what
you... Well, I thought you might examine him. You know, put him away somewhere for a little while.
But that's a matter for a psychiatrist. You'd have to get his consent or else fill out papers in a legal manner.
Oh, no. That's just what I don't want to do. There mustn't be any publicity. You see, what I want is to get him out of the house long enough to make a thorough search of his room. He never leaves it. And I'm sure he has thousands and thousands of dollars hidden in that room somewhere. I've almost caught him several times, but he's too, well, too crafty.
Mrs. Miller, what you're proposing is highly irregular, perhaps even criminal. I'll forget what you've told me, but I... Just at that moment, there was a disturbance in the hall outside. I recognized the voices of my two friends, Sandy and Jill, and a third I'd never heard before. Jill is my landlady's daughter, and Sandy's a pal of hers. I opened the door, and into the room they walked, with a policeman grasping each one firmly by the arm.
You the doctor?
Yes.
These kids say they're friends of yours.
Honest, Dr. Tim. We didn't mean any harm.
We're just having some fun. Gosh, how are we to know them?
Setting fire to weeds in the lot next door they was. And if I hadn't been walking along on my way home...
He says he ought to put us in jail.
Now, hold on a moment, both you kids. Officer, I think we both realize how serious setting fires can be.
Burn the whole neighborhood down playing with matches, they will.
Well, we didn't mean it.
However, I can vouch for them if you'll...
Just one moment, officer. I'd like to say that it isn't the first time they've been in trouble for setting fires. Oh, I knew, all right. After all, I've lived on the other side of that lot for several years, and I can tell you a thing or two.
I looked at Mrs. Miller in amazement, and I should have been able to see right then what she was getting at, but I didn't. Jill and Sandy don't ordinarily play with fire, and they aren't problems to the neighborhood. I ought to know, because we've been friends a long time, and they've given me some mighty valuable help in my cases. Anyway, within a few minutes, Officer Barton had turned them over to my care with a warning. Mrs. Miller had left after glaring at me with a look of hatred, and Sandy, Jill, and I were alone. From their looks, they were sorry kids. And I could tell they were expecting to really catch it this time. There they stood, silent and scared. Finally...
Gee, Dr. Tim, we're dopes.
Bigger dopes than you realize, maybe. Let me see your hand, Sandy.
Oh, it's nothing. Just burned it a little.
Jill, hand me the serial bandages.
Okay.
Thanks.
Ow!
Hold still until I get a dressing on that burn.
But aren't you going to put grease or something on it?
I am not. First, I'm going to clean the hand thoroughly to prevent any infection. Ointments and greasy medicines many times are the best means of spreading infection in burns. Of course, if it's a very severe burn, certain infection-stopping drugs are necessary.
Gosh, it hurts!
I could say at this point, young man, it serves you right. Now, hold still a moment. Yes, you're lucky. Ever see a human body with really bad burns on it? The kind you might have had if your clothes had caught on fire in that vacant lot?
No.
Not a pretty sight. It can mean months in the hospital. Infection so bad to look at, it would make you sick at your stomach. Dressings in burn cases often have to be changed under an anesthetic like ether because the pain is so terrible. And you go through more months of operations where skin is taken from unburned parts of your body and grafted to the places where the fire has burned clear down into the muscles. Sometimes you wish you'd died. You'd be scarred forever. Yes, doctors today can save the lives of people who have lost 70% of the skin of their bodies with penicillin, with blood transfusions and blood fractions, and with modern hospital care. But believe me, it's the most horrible pain in the world. All right, Sandy, your burn is dressed. I'll look at it again tomorrow. Above all, don't break those blisters.
Okay, Dr. Tim.
Honest to gosh, Dr. Tim, we'll never play with fire again.
About a half hour later, Sandy and Jill had gone to think over what I'd told them, I hope. And before settling down to some chemical tests I was making in connection with a murder case, I happened to glance out of the window. Mrs. Hugh Miller, whom I'd almost forgotten in the excitement, was walking towards her house with a bundle under her arm. It was a rather sizable package in somewhat odd shape. And I didn't think much about it at the time. Instead, as I worked with my laboratory apparatus, I pondered upon the fantastic story of old Mr. Miller, her father-in-law, and the mysterious treasure he was supposed to have hidden in his room. I talked to him a few times, as neighbors will, the summer before. I'd put him down in my mental notebook as perfectly harmless, but a little queer. When the First World War had ended back in 1918, he'd been with the Army of Occupation in Germany for a while. He had a pension, he told me, and had decided a year or so ago to come live with his son and daughter-in-law. That was all I knew, except that his health was none too good, and he rarely left his room these days and hadn't been out of the house since fall. But where Mrs. Hugh Miller had gotten hold of the idea that her father-in-law was hiding a treasure, I couldn't imagine. I wish now I'd taken the trouble to think things through, even talk to the old man. It might have saved a lot of suffering. It was just getting dark when I finished my lab test and glanced out of the window that faced the Miller house. I rubbed my eyes and looked twice, for at that moment there burst out of the Miller's back door an apparition wrapped in flame. If it hadn't been for the dreadful scream that burst from it, I would never recognize that flaming torch as a human being. In one bound, I was out my door, over the fence, and running toward the Millers. Sandy and Jill were in front of me. From which direction they came, I didn't know. Still, the flame-covered creature ran around in circles. I shouted, "Sandy! Jill! Stop him! Stop him! Don't let him run! Grab a blanket off that clothesline and wrap him up in it!"
"Okay, Dr. Jim."
Before I could reach the Miller yard, Sandy and Jill had both made flying tackles at the flaming figure and were rolling him over and over in the dirt, smothering out the flame with a blanket. In a moment, I joined them. The thing, for that's the only way to describe it now, was still, except for a moaning sound that came out of his burned and agonized face. Oh, Lord, I thought. Why will people run when their clothes are on fire? To lie down and smother the flame is their only salvation. I was giving the man, for it was old Mr. Miller, first aid when his daughter-in-law came shouting out the door.
Gosh, I'll bet she hasn't even called the fire department.
I'll call them.
But Mrs. Miller went running back into the house, as Jill told me later, and was telephoning when Jill came panting up to her. By this time, the whole neighborhood was gathering around the house, and it seemed like hardly a moment after I turned again to the suffering figure lying on the grass that the fire engines came charging up, followed by an ambulance, a squad car, and all the rescue apparatus. The fire was quickly put out. It was only after the old man had been put into the ambulance that I had a chance to notice what was going on. The first thing I heard was Mrs. Miller shouting.
They did it. It was those two kids right there. You know yourself, officer, that you caught them setting fires this morning.
But how do you know they did?
I saw them running around the corner of the house just after I noticed the blaze. And I'll testify in court that they did it.
Well, you two kids, I don't know whether you're guilty or not, but I'll have to take you down to the station for questioning.
A few minutes later, the officer had left with Sandy and Jill. Both of them had thrown me anguished looks, but were bravely holding back their tears. I could have done something, I suppose, but there wasn't time. I had to get into that house as quickly as possible. I was beginning to put two and two together, and I was certain that what I would discover would solve a part of the mystery, at least. I knew who had set that fire, and why. Whispering a few words into the ear of the fire chief, I saw him nod and lead the way into the Miller house while Mrs. Miller was still talking excitedly with the neighbors. I hoped Mrs. Miller wouldn't see us go in, or she might destroy the very evidence to prove my case. It was at the door to the old man's room I found the first thing I was looking for, a home fire extinguisher, empty. The rug and the bedclothes were burned, and the room was filled with smoke. But aside from this, there was little evidence of the fire. On my hands and knees, I sniffed at the floor. there was an odor of kerosene, faint but recognizable. One more thing remained to do. I lifted the phone, dialed a number, waited until there was an answer, and asked one question. Hello? Dr. Tim speaking. Yes. Will you give me the exact time of the first telephone call to report the fire at 1216 East Beaumont Place? No, not the second. The first thing I did after finding out about those calls was to call the doctor at the hospital. The old man had a chance to live, thanks to the prompt way in which Sandy and Jill handled the emergency and to modern hospital care and medical advances. He'd been treated with a new technique discovered during the war, the use of pressurized Vaseline. Blood transfusions, blood fractions, all the miracles of modern science were being used. Then I hopped into my car and went down to the police station. Two scared kids faced me.
I know you didn't, kids,
and I'm sorry I had to let things go as far as this. The real criminal's been arrested. And Officer Barton says to tell you he never really believed you set that fire in the first place. But he had to question you because of what Mrs. Miller said.
Oh, he treated us swell. But who did do it?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Well, it was a person who called upon me this morning. I'm afraid she got the idea of how to scare an old man into disclosing the hiding place for his money when Officer Barton brought you into the office for starting fires in the vacant lot.
You mean Mrs. Miller?
I do. I should have known when I saw her walk past my window with a fire extinguisher, wrapped up, but still I should have known.
But gee, what happened?
Well, she meant just to scare the old man so he'd grab his money out of the hiding place and run. Everything went fine, except Mrs. Miller was too smart. She called the fire department first and then started the fire. I thought the trucks got there too quickly after the first alarm, which was really the second.
And gee, I'll bet she put the fire out with the extinguisher, or almost out, so it really wouldn't burn the house down.
Exactly. And then blamed you two kids, which shows the importance of a good reputation. She almost got you convicted because of the fire this morning.
Yeah, hung the rap on us, by golly.
What about the treasure?
Well, I guess we won't know the answer until old Mr. Miller can talk. There was no trace of it.
Sure there was. I've got it right here in my pocket. The old man was clutching it in his hand when he ran out of the house.
Sandy handed me the remains of some charred banknotes. In one corner of each was printed the figure 1 million, 5 million, 50,000. Not dollars, but marks. Worthless, inflated German marks of 30 years ago. Not worth the paper they were printed on. You see, the old man had picked them up while he was in the Army of Occupation in Germany, and had thought for years they'd be worth something, that he'd become a millionaire. And for that, he had almost lost his life. That and one other reason. When Mrs. Miller's plan had miscarried, and she'd set him on fire, too, he should have remembered the most elementary thing in the world. And that's don't get panicky. Don't run, even toward water. Just lie down and roll, or wrap yourself in something to smother the fire. I'll bet Sandy and Jill never forget it. This is Dr. Tim, Detective, saying so long until next week at this same time, when Sandy, Jill, and I will bring you, by transcription, the mystery of the dog that did and didn't.
Thrilling music for Dr. Tim Detective, or talk over it at least. Is that his first name or his last name, I wonder, Dr. Tim? Or is he just trying to be pals with little Petey and Joey there? All right, well, if you enjoyed that, there are 5 full episodes of Dr. Tim Detective on the Golden Age Flash Drive, and that's only 1 hour out of 100, so don't worry. There's plenty of good stuff on there, too. A $60 pledge, and you can get the Flash Drive, Convention 2019 Flash Drive for the Golden Age of Radio, and support the radio station. And just when I thought you would all abandon me, suddenly we get some pledges in here. So let me thank a couple of people. So let's see, who do we have here? Bert Lazarin, making generous donations in the name of the Golden Age of Radio, as well as Leonard Sherman, making very generous contribution to keep this program on the air and to keep WBAI blasting out of your radios. Wait, is there one more? Yeah, there is. There's another one. Let's see. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. We need more and more and more of you to join us, as did Scott of Jersey City, becoming a listener sponsor, a member of WBAI. Didn't actually know that it was for the Golden Age of Radio, but hey, that's okay. Get it in onto the wire at 8:56. Good enough for me. Well, listen, next week, I'm not sure. Will we be here or will we not be here? Might depend on whether you make the call right now or whether I just decide enough already. 516-620-3602. All right, maybe I should do what I ought to do. Say thank you and good night. And play an announcement or two. Here's one I didn't even see because it was mislabeled. A show coming up in 2 hours. So stick around. This is WBAI New York. Thanks, everyone, for calling. And keep calling, 516-620-3602. I'm Max Mead. If you want to write, max@wbai.org. And our Facebook page, facebook.com/Max Golden Age, for lovely illustrations, full cast lists, and upcoming events. Thanks, and good night.
The Pacifica Bylaws referendum is underway. And as a member, you have a right to vote on whether to replace the current bylaws with the proposed bylaws. Some proponents assert that drastic change is necessary in the face of steady financial decline and a significant loss of listenership at some stations. Some opponents claim there is a secret plan to sell off one or more stations, such as WBAI in New York, and use the proceeds to prop up the remaining stations. For more info, visit elections.pacifica.org or leave a message on 510-931-7504. Be sure to cast your ballot by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on March 19th.
John Cain here. On Thursday, February 27th at 7:30 p.m., Regan and I from WBAI's Let's Talk will be hosting a screening of Invasion and a discussion on the assault on the Wet'suwet'en. You've all heard of Standing Rock. Now it's time to stand up for the people and land of the Wet'suwet'en. Join me and come meet my new co-host, Regan, as we address the new battlefront for Native and environmental resistance. That's Thursday, February 27th at 7:30 p.m. for Invasion and a discussion on the attack on the Wet'suwet'en. That's at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. The event is free, but donations to WBAI are greatly appreciated. Yahweh.
Well, it is a minute to almost 2 minutes past 3 a.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming worldwide at WBAI.org. Lister, and Burn Baby Burn, is not here at this moment, and I don't know if he's coming or not. Occasionally the trains, especially in the overnights, cause him to be delayed, not to mention the downpours outside. So what I'm going to do is start up a program, and if Lister should arrive, he can feel free to take over. But, here's one we heard just a little while ago, but seems to be quite a popular program. As heard on Saturday afternoons here on WBAI, let's go to Isaac Ferguson. A little holiday music anyway. to get us through till 5 a.m.
.org.
Oh, yeah.
And we're creeping up on 4 o'clock here at WBAI New York. Here comes Isaac Ferguson and Caribbean Voices and Beyond.
Contributing to slave time tradition, I'm from Chow Chan in Tang Si Tong. man will stand by and let you pass. And he gon' say the black man gets serious at last.
Be a silly bang party.